This Two Lectures episode features adjunct professor and design thinker Dave Evans, recorded live at the global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2018.
Hey, it's great to be here. So, so I am Dave Evans, and I am one of the co-founders of the Life Design Lab at Stanford University. So just a shout out to my buddy. So that's Bill Burnett, that's the other half, a little shorter but brighter. He's my boss, actually. And in fact, he's running a team of people doing the real work right now. Literally, as we sit here, there's a room full of people about the same size from 21 different universities from around the world learning how to do what we do. So we're all doing lots of interesting things. So what is it we actually do at the Life Design Lab? Okay, so what we do is we teach primarily these three classes. We teach designing your life to third and fourth year undergraduates who are about to graduate, go off into the world, what do I do next? We teach designing your Stanford to freshmen and sophomores. How do you go to colleges in a design mindset? And designing the professional, you know, to master's students and particularly PhDs. Little secret, the designing the professional class is almost identical to designing your life. But you're a grad student, so you get a bigger word. Particularly PhD. Now, we teach between 15 and 20% of all the students at Stanford. These are relatively bright people. So why do we need to do that? Why do these smart people have to take this dumb class about what to figure out about how to do? Well, we're, you know, user-centered designers. We want to focus on the user. So if we go talk to the user, that would be a student, and ask them some questions, what might we hear? Well, if you go to a student and say at Stanford, hey, what are you going to do after you graduate? Listen to the insightful thoughts to that important question.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
I was going to go to med school, but some grades changed that. I think I'm going to go to law school.
My favorite right there.
I have no idea.
Yeah, the guy on the right, I'm not even looking at you. I do not acknowledge the question. Now, did we wait all day long for the 11 clueless kids at Stanford in order to make them look bad? No, well, this takes about 10 minutes. now, here's the really cool thing. Where did we get this video? At a career fair. Yeah, when you're all ready to go interview with the grown-ups, got the clean clothes on, like, you know, what do you want to do in here, man? I don't really know. Now, why is this going on? Well, let's be really clear. Yeah, they're smart, but being really good at school has nothing to do with being really good at life. If you didn't hear anything from Angela, you got that part figured out, right? And you know, being really smart has nothing to do with being really clear. You know, so what that means is, you know, there's a challenge. So the challenge that the Life Design Lab tries to step up to, our mission statement, according to me and Bill anyway, is that we are going to help you apply the innovation principles of design thinking to the wicked problem of designing your life at or after the university. Now, if you double-click on the colored words, you can get a white paper. This is pedagogically correct stuff. By the way, am I speaking too quickly for you? Please say no.
No.
Good, because I'm not going to slow down. So now, that's kind of a technical answer. Could you put it a little more simply, Dave? Well, sure. I mean, more simplistically, it would sort of be we're the guys that teach the course to help you figure out what you want to be when you grow up. Now, how do you, by the way, say, oh, I cannot wait until I'm all done growing up. I want to be all done growing up. Yeah, good, because then you get to be dead. You know, and that's not that interesting. So we want to not say it this way. This is a common way of saying something, but it's a dumb way of saying it. We actually want to be the guys who help you keep figuring out what you want to be next as you continue growing. Who's up for that? Yeah, that's much more of a do mindset. Now, when we say it that way, people go, ooh, can I take the class? Can I take the class? You know, we're in our 12th year. The 27th rendering of Design Your Life just got completed in the spring. You know, and for years, we've been saying no. Unless you're only one of the 16,000 people on our campus called our matriculated students, the answer was no. If you're one of the other 7.2 billion people, I guess you just don't matter. So we got tired of saying that, so we wrote the book. We finally wrote the book, you know, and to my great surprise, that became a New York Times bestseller. And then, you know, even David calls up and says, hey, come talk to me about the Do People. So, you know, why is that happening? Why are you even in this room? You know, you could be outside where it's warmer, and, you know. So why is that happening? Well, we think one of the primary contributions to the reason for all this is because people are, in fact, stuck. You know, you know, seemed like a good idea at the time. The no cows were harmed in the making of a slide, trust me. And why? They're stuck on what we call dysfunctional beliefs, ideas that are either just flat out untrue or at least not generative enough to be invested in. Let me give you a couple of examples. So I happen to teach at college these days, and so a classic college dysfunctional belief is, you know, some students sitting around, these are literally pictures of our students on our quad at our campus going, hey, what are you majoring in? Oh, I'm majoring in anthropology with a minor in creative writing. You all know the next question. What are you going to do with that exactly? You know, and the answer is going to be unemployed or go to business school. Okay, so. Now, why is this a dysfunctional belief? It's a dysfunctional belief because 8 out of 10 college graduates within 5 to 10 years of graduation are working outside their field of baccalaureate study. How many of you are still doing what you studied when you were 19? Quickly, all 10 of you get together later, have a nice time, okay. That was an unusually large percentage, by the way. By the way, you know, how many went to some higher education, some form of what have you? Okay, now, how many different baccalaureate degrees did they offer where you went to school? Like, you could shop from, you know, 10, 400? I mean, how many versions of a baccalaureate, the places you used to hang out, could you get? Hundreds. Nope, you're lying. 20? 30? Typically 25 to 75. Stanford currently claims it offers 74. Frankly, a dozen of those are combined programs. Now, like two majors holding hands is not a new major, but you know, it's really about 62. Now, there are 7.2 billion people in the world. What are you going to do with that? The one-to-one correlation between what you studied and what you're allowed to do in the world. There are more than 62 things people do, people. Do the math. I mean, because it's a really dysfunctional belief. Move on, bad question. Okay, so number two. What's your passion? Or more properly pronounced, what's your passion? What's your passion? Is this really your passion? Here's the problem with the passion question. Dysfunctional. Because 8 out of 10 people, according to the research, answer the question with either, I don't know yet, I'm hoping to find one, or which one did you want to hear about first? I've got a bunch. Now, we're treating 8 out of 10 completely normal, healthy people as though they need remediation. Again, the point that I think Elle was trying to say is, boy, pick your questions carefully. You just had a question deserves to be an organizing principle in your life. You better make sure you know its belief system and you bought it before you buy into that question. This question believes that you should know your passion. There is one. You should know it before you've even done it in the world. The world will let you do it and you can at least make a living at it. And none of those things is true, necessarily. So passion's great. We get a new rep as being the anti-passion people. We're not anti-passion. We're just anti-presuppositional passion before you've done anything. You know, most people earn a passion by living into a certain kind of a life rather than start already knowing it. So it's not a good place to begin. Now, my favorite, you know, is be the best you. Are you being the best you? Are you sure this is really it? Is this it? You're not settling, oh God, you're not settling, are you? Do people do not settle? They do, okay. Here's the problem with best. Best has a very specific denotative meaning. The word means something. It means against a series of alternatives. There is one objective set of criteria against which I can evaluate all those different alternatives equally, and it makes sense. I can understand it well enough and actually rank them accordingly, and the top ranked one is, in fact, the best one. Now, look, I'm like the oldest guy in the room again. I'm 65. I have 7 grandchildren. Anybody here got more than 7 grandchildren? Shoot! Shoot, you are the first person who has beat me in England. I am so upset. How many grandkids you got? 9. Let's hear it for the 9 grandkids. Woo! Yeah, but my kids aren't done. Are yours? Okay. There, some of them are busy as we speak. I'm going to go over. I can just tell. Now, here's the problem with the best is that, you know, I'm on my 6th career. You help me figure out what's better. Is my grandfather self better than my educational reformer self? Is he better than my startup consultant self? How do you compare them? You know, it's not fair. It's not appropriate. It's not even apples and oranges. It's like apples, frogs, and steel. Quickly, what's better, a frog or steel? Quickly. Come on, folks. I mean, this doesn't make any sense. Bad idea. So let's move on. So, you know, there's lots of great yous. There's no one right you. There's lots of good yous. You know, you can have even more than one must. You might have to pick a must, you know. You certainly don't want to get stuck in should. Don't should on yourself. I won't should on you. You shouldn't should on yourself either. It's never too late to get started, so we ought to be building our way forward by designing our lives. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, it means using this design thinking stuff, the secret sauce. You've heard of design thinking or human-centered design, probably popular in this room, yeah. Most of the designers in the front, of course. The best way to understand what design thinking is what it's not. There are lots of ways to think. For instance, in engineering thinking, we solve our way forward. We have what are called tame problems, well-bounded problems, well-contained problems, where you know enough information, you've got the equations, you know all the data, and you can actually solve it. You can build a bridge, and when it wakes up the next morning, it doesn't change its mind. You know, I mean, the bridge across the Bristol Bay does not come up on Thursday going, I'm just over it. You know, I'm just not doing this anymore. I've changed my mind. You know, that doesn't happen. Engineers get to solve problems once for good. Then you get business people, probably some business people in the room. You're never done. You're never right in business, but you can be better. You can be even quantifiably better by different figures of merit. You know, you're never done having your customer love you enough or making enough money or whatever it may be. But nonetheless, you can, in a very technical form, get better and better and better. You're never done, never right. It's a way of thinking, optimization, perfectly appropriate for that context. Then there's research thinking, you know, which goes all the way back to Plato and Aristotle, who created this thing called the Academy, and how we come up with rigorous definitions of knowledge here in the West. There's a certain way of doing that. These are great, except they don't solve a whole class of problems called wicked problems, ones where you don't even know if you've solved it till you're done, and after you're done, you can't ever use it again, things like that. That's like, oh, like human stuff. And for those human wicked problems, design thinking is a good way to go. We build our way forward. We don't analyze our way forward, because mostly what we're doing in design is inventing the future. None of us have been there. You can't analyze the future. You can't run the numbers on the future. You have to go actually create it empirically. So we define design thinking one of two ways. A five-step process, we've taught it this way. Actually, this is the oldest interdisciplinary program at Stanford. It's 60-plus years old. We start with empathy, deeply understand. We don't even figure out what problem we're solving. The definition stage is what problem you're really solving. We problem find before we problem solve. Then we have a bunch of ideas. Then prototype it, the heartblood of what design is really about. And then we test it. We do that from a point of view recognizing step zero is always accept. You can't solve a problem you're not willing to have. None of you, of course, I'm sure, but you know some people who keep complaining about what's going on in their lives, and you realize, gosh, you know, what's really going on is they don't really have a problem. What they've got is a problem with their problem. If you've got a problem with your problem, that's a problem because you can't solve that problem. So you got to go through acceptance. Trust me, if it all comes out happy, it goes through a place that looks just like where you are today. So now we do that from a point of view. The point of view involves a set of mindsets. These are the five we tend to lean into, the most, the centerpiece being curiosity, where all the human energy is, that makes us want to go out and radically collaborate first by asking lots of questions. Those questions get new insights that cause us to reframe things, maintaining a process that's really generative, so we're mindful about that, and when in doubt, do something. Now, is this very do-oriented? Do we get along? Why did David call? Well, I mean, does that look familiar to you? I mean, it's kind of like what the do thing is all about. I mean, we agreed before we even started. Now, what is design in your life? How do we apply design thinking to this rather big question, what do I do with my own wild and precious life? Well, you know, this is the material we need to cover. there's not enough time for that. That's the 25 to 40 hour process. We haven't got 10 weeks, we've got 7 minutes, which that's gonna go really fast. So what it really is, if I have to give you the short answer, it's just this. It's get curious, talk to people, try stuff, and tell your story. If you do those four things, you're good to go. Let me dive into each one briefly. Get curious. This is really popular here. I don't think I need to tell you. Anybody here think curiosity isn't interesting? Okay, who's curious here? Okay, you're good. You're fine. So really simply, and curate your curiosity. You can be better at curiosity. You know, you can actually learn how to do that. And hanging out with people like this is a good way to do that, which means you're pursuing latent wonderfulness. You make the look, if you notice whenever you pick up a rock, what do you find? A whole bunch of bugs are under there. What do those bugs know about that rock that you don't? They already thought it was incredibly cool. You know, so I need to know what these bugs know because this rock is amazing. You know, and every rock is amazing if you just understand what the local bugs are thinking about. So if you pursue latent wonderfulness, like something's really interesting in here, I've got to go find it. You know, that's the presupposition that's going to drive your curiosity forward. A brief example, a young man named Eric, I was selling that idea, you know, just presuppose that something is interesting there. If you really exhaust yourself, go, oh, it is astonishingly boring. I guess I'm going to go now. That's fine. He says, look, Dave, don't waste my time. I know for a fact there's some things that are so uninteresting you don't even need to look. Give me an example, Eric, like the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, you know, the spy network in the U.S. I mean, I hate those, but there's nothing about those guys that's interesting. He said, so interesting, Eric, they're coming to campus next week. You are now assigned to go. Because you can't make me go. I'm going to flunk you. And he goes, you can't do that. I go, watch me. So, well, it's not true. But anyway, you know, and so he goes, you know. He was right. And he came back, and he walks into class. He's really grumpy. He's looking really grumpy. I'm going, this is going to go badly, you know. And he's sitting down. He's just call on me. Please, just call on me, you know. And I kind of go, so Eric, how'd it go? He says, I'm really upset. I go, well, what happened? He goes, it was so interesting. But they still kill people, that bothers me, you know. But it was interesting, you know, so you got to give yourself a chance. So get curious. Now talk to people, you know, go out there and get the story. And what I don't mean is I don't mean a transactional conversation. You're not trying to, you know, get the money or get the job or get the deal. We're not trying to make something happen. We're trying to get the story. which simply means hear what's going on. So, for instance, that of course brings up Parliament. I was shut out of Westminster Abbey once, but they said, hey, the garden's still open, you can go over there. And my wife and I are wandering through the garden, there's a little leftover champagne thing going on, and this woman beckons us over. She says, we have some champagne left, would you like some? So I get into a conversation with her. It turned out she's the chief parliamentarian of Westminster Abbey and Parliament. She's the one who teaches you when to kneel, you know. We kept having this long conversation, and she kept going, do you really want to hear more about this? I said, yes, I'm really, and I got this whole long story, you know, and she told me the whole story because, you know, interested is interesting. She wants to talk to me because I think she's interesting. Interested is interesting. And by the way, that came up years later when a friend of mine who lives in Costa Rica wanted to learn more about parliamentary procedure. I said, well, you need to call my friend Anne. The story will continue. Then try stuff. By try stuff, I mean get out there and do things. Don't just have conversations, really do stuff. No, set the bar low and clear. Hear all this inspirational stuff like you can be amazing, go kill it, you know, be your Olympic self. Too hard. You know, set the bar low. Clear it and do it again, okay? Angela probably didn't start with a 12-foot leap, you know, onto a razor blade. That's not how you begin. So again, my friend in Costa Rica, Carol, you know, how does she set the bar locally? She said, hey, Eric, her husband, who actually works for a big company and involves with expats all the time. He was having a dinner with some expats coming into Costa Rica and said, can I just be a fly on the wall? Can I go sit in on your dinner and listen in on how expats are having the conversation. He goes, what's that got to do with parliamentary procedure? That has nothing to do with parliament. She says, I know, but it's parliamentary procedure is a cross-cultural experience, and that's kind of a cross-cultural experience. I just want to see what it's like. Because Carol understood that trying stuff is doing stuff. No, she's not suddenly going to go work for the queen or something like that. That never happened, of course. But nonetheless, it's taking a small step, and any step at all gets you going. That's what this bias to action do stuff is really all about. Now, last thing is tell your story. Why? Because if you curate your curiosity, then reflect on the experiences you're having in these conversations and these experiences, you've got something interesting to say. It's called a story. Because not only is interested interesting is interesting. So Carol sits in on this conversation. She's listening into this dinner, right? Going back to Carol's story, you know, and she was hanging back there. Now and then, when they're doing the wine and cheese thing, she's chatting some people up. And then one of the senior guys walks over and goes, what are you doing here? Well, I'm Eric's wife. Yeah. What are you doing here? Well, I'm just interested. What are you interested in? Well, you know, I had this conversation with Anne from England, because my friend Dave, you know, and we're doing this thing, and I'm really curious about how, and he said, really? Tell me more. Because she had something to say. She had been reflecting on her experience. She'd been encountering interesting people. She had a story worth listening to. And she said, do you think you could help me? Because, like, I have no idea what you're talking about, but I got to tell you this. I did work with Susan in this company, and she was amazing. I don't know what she's doing, but go talk to Susan. Goes to talk to Susan. Susan says, well, the hard thing is real estate, because what people really want is a place to live. If you want to see what happens when expats freak out, go on some sales calls with me. I'm looking for real estate. Carol's now a very successful realtor, because it turns out there's always a cross-cultural experience called moving, and you get to help people do that all the time. So you never know what's going to happen. So get that virtuous cycle working for you. So what do these four steps really look like? It looks like this. You know, so hey, get curious, go talk to people, you know, have some experiences, then tell that story, which gets you more curious and you more interested, and you keep this thing going around. What are you doing? You're giving your curiosity a walk. It's curiosity with legs. Repeat until engaged. That's it. That's designing your life.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.